This is the Music Halls of Fame podcast. This week, we honor the year in music for 1994, along with a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame class of 1994. We also look at the case for putting Fela Kuti into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, plus our spotlight museum is the Buddy Holly Center in Lubbock, Texas. Before we get going with the podcast, like everyone tells you, please like, subscribe, and hit the notification bell so you'll know when these podcast episodes drop, which is usually every Thursday. Now, on to this week's episode. The year was 1994. In music, 1994 was marked by the death of Kurt Cobain from Nirvana. 1994 was also the year that Michael Jackson married Lisa Marie Presley, the Eagles got back together and hell froze over, Aerosmith became the first major label band to purposely put a free song onto the internet for downloading, and Lisa Left Eye Lopez burned down her boyfriend's mansion. Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned, who also knows how to use a flame accelerant. Woodstock 94 happened. The three-day festival was televised on MTV and helped to put artists Nine Inch Nails, Green Day, Sheryl Crow, and Melissa Etheridge's careers into overdrive. Bill Wyman left the Rolling Stones. Pink Floyd went on tour for the final time. Pearl Jam went to war with Ticketmaster. Michael Bolton was found guilty of copyright infringement after the court found that his song Love is a Beautiful Thing was a little too close to the Isley Brothers song of the same name. Bryan Adams became the first Western music artist since the end of the Vietnam War to hold a concert in that country. The United States Supreme Court ruled that parodying songs was allowed under the Fair Use Law. The ruling had to do with the Two Live Crew's use of Roy Orbison's song, Oh Pretty Woman, without getting permission first. The biggest selling song of 1994 was Ace of Base's The Sign. In fact, it was the year of Ace of Base, as the group had three of the top 10 biggest selling singles, with the other two songs being All That She Wants and Don't Turn Around. Other hits from 1994 included I Swear by All for One, I'll Make Love to You by Boys to Men, The Power of Love by Celine Dion, Hero by Mariah Carey, Stay by Lisa Loeb, and Breathe Again by Toni Braxton. Despite the success of Ace of Base's album The Sign, the biggest selling album of the year was actually the Lion King soundtrack. 1994 was also the year where a lot of breakthrough and landmark albums were released. Alice in Chains released their EP Jar of Flies, which became the first EP to hit number one on the Billboard Top 200 Albums chart. Green Day released their album Dookie. Nine Inch Nails released their album The Downward Spiral. The Offspring released their album Smash, which became the biggest selling independent album of all time. Weezer released their debut album. Oasis released their debut album, Definitely Maybe. The Arctic Monkeys released their debut album, and Jeff Buckley released his groundbreaking album, Grace. Tim McGraw, Boys to Men, Counting Crows, Stone Temple Pilots, Kenny G, and Mariah Carey also had big-selling albums in 1994. In country music, the biggest albums included John Michael Montgomery's Kickin' It Up, Garth Brooks's The Hits, George Strait's Lead On, Tim McGraw's Not a Moment Too Soon, Mary Chapin Carpenter's Stories in the Road, Brooks and Dunn's Waitin' on Sundown, and the big country singles included John Michael Montgomery's I Swear and also his song Be My Baby Tonight, George Strait's The Big One, Tim McGraw's Don't Take the Girl, Clay Walker's Dreaming with My Eyes Open, Travis Tritt's Foolish Pride, Clint Black's A Good Run of Bad Luck, Mark Chestnut's I Just Wanted to You to Know, and Shenandoah's If Bubba Can Dance, I Can Too. In hip-hop, there were classic albums like Notorious B.I.G.'s Ready to Die, Nas's Illmatic, J.Rue the Damage's The Sun Rises in the East, Pete Rock and C.L. Smooth's The Main Ingredient, Organized Confusion's Stress the Extinction Agenda, Snoop Dogg's Murder Was the Case, Warren G's Regulate G-Funk Era, Method Man's Tykel, Bone Thugs and Harmony's Creepin' on a Come Up, Gangstar's Hard to Earn, Diggable Planet's Blowout Comb, Scarface's The Diary, Gravedigga's 6 Feet Deep, and Outkast's Southern Playlist, Cadillac Music. Some of the popular hip-hop songs were Warren G's Regulate, Coolio's Fantastic Voyage, Heavy D's Nothing But Love, and also Got Me Waiting, Salt-N-Pepa and En Vogue's What a Man, Snoop Dogg's Gin and Juice, and also Who Am I, Craig Max's Flavor in Your Ear, Tupac's Keep Your Head Up, Bone Thugs and Harmony's Thuggish Ruggish Bone, and the notorious B.I.G.'s Juicy, It Was All a Dream. In dance music, DJ Paul Oakenfold broadcasted his first legendary Goa mix. Mixmag started a trend when they anointed Sasha as the first superstar DJ. The label would be applied to a number of festival headlining DJs after that. The record label Metalhead, started by DJs Chemistry, Storm, and Goldie, helped to put drum and bass onto the genre map. Orbital performed a legendary performance at the Glastonbury Music Festival, which helped to bring EDM to a more mainstream audience. Great Britain passed the Criminal Justice and Public Order Act, which tried to punish rave culture. Ravers responded, of course, by protesting and raving, although they did have one sanctioned rave at Wembley Stadium that drew 10,000 people. Cafe Mambo and the Cream Parties also started in Ibiza in that year. Some of the big dance albums that were popular in 1994 included Massive Attack's Protection, Portishead's Dummy, The Prodigy's Music for the Jilted Generation, which had the hit songs Voodoo People and No Good, and Paul Van Dyke's 45 RPM, which had the influential song Foreign Angel. Other classic dance tracks that were big that year included Livin' Joy's Dreamer, Reel to Reel's I Like to Move It, Move It, 20 Fingers' Short Short Man, which is also called something else, which I'm not going to repeat here, 2 Unlimited's Let the Beat Control Your Body, Real McCoy's Runaway and Another Night, M People's Moving On Up, Crystal Waters' 100% Pure Love, General Public's I'll Take You There, and Gloria Estefan's Turn the Beat Around. And if you think Eurodance was big in that era, you're not kidding. In Latin music, the biggest artists included Gloria Estefan, Luis Miguel, The Gypsy Kings, Selena, Mañá, Bronco, Marco Antonio Solis, and Los Buques, La Mafia, Ana Gabriel, and John Secada. Musicals and revivals of musicals that opened on Broadway included Beauty and the Beast, Carousel, Damn Yankees, Grease, Showboat, and Sunset Boulevard. Musical movies that came out in 1994 included Airheads, Backbeat, Fear of a Black Hat, Immortal Beloved, Hated, Gigi Allen and the Murder Junkies, The Lion King, The Swan Princess, and Thumbelina. Bands who got together in 1994 included 20 Fingers, Basement Jacks, La Bouche, Bowling for Soup, The Derek Trucks Band, Disturbed, Death in Vegas, The Foo Fighters, The Fugees, Gravity Kills, Hoobastank, Method Man and Redman, The Lox, Limp Bizkit, Lucid Nation, Lunatic, Pendulum, Muse, Seven Dust, Sasha and John Digweed, Scarfo, The Rasmus, Republica, Rednecks, Orgy, Orbit, Orange 9mm, Space Hog, The Spice Girls, Sneaker Pimps, Sunvolt, Skunk Anansie, Storyville, System of a Down, Static X, Total, and Tenacious D. Groups who either broke up until, of course, their inevitable reunions or announced a hiatus included Acid Test, Bob's Your Uncle, Nirvana, chiefly because of Kurt Cobain's death, High Five, School of Fish, The Staple Singers, Los Buques, Jellyfish, Con Can, Level 42, Leaders of the New School, DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, Dramarama, Main Source, Uncle Tupelo, Whitesnake, Winger, The Wonder Stuff, New Kids on the Block, 5 Blind Boys of Mississippi, and Firehose. Groups who got back together in 1994 included The Circle Jerks, King Crimson, and Hell Froze Over and Got the Eagles back together. Artists who were born in 1994 included Justin Bieber, Harry Styles, Bad Bunny, Maluma, Ashton Irwin of 5 Seconds of Summer, Howard Lawrence of Disclosure, DJ Nathan Daw, DJ Madeon, Phoebe Bridgers, Kali Uchis, Christina Grimmie, Ava Max, Kai of EXO, RM and J-Hope of BTS, Lin Gunn of Paris, Halsey, rappers King Von, Dax, Dreezy, and Lil Baby. Artists who passed away, aside from the aforementioned Kurt Cobain, included singer-songwriter Harry Nilsson, composer Henry Mancini, songwriter Jules Stein, entertainers Donald Swan of Flanders and Swan, Martha Ray and Dinah Shore, guitarist Fred Sonic Smith of MC5, bassist Kristen Flaff of Hole, singers Ephraim Lewis, Garnett Silk, and Dan Hartman, jazz guitarists Eric Gale and Joe Pass, and jazz singers Carmen McRae and Cab Calloway. In awards for the music of 1994, at the Grammy Awards, Sheryl Crow won Best New Artist and Record of the Year for All I Want to Do, while Bruce Springsteen won Song of the Year for Streets of Philadelphia. Tony Bennett's MTV Unplugged won Best Album. At the American Music Awards, Michael Bolton, Mariah Carey, Ace of Base, and the Lion King soundtrack were the big winners. At the Billboard Music Awards, Ace of Base won Artist of the Year. At the MTV Video Music Awards, Video of the Year went to Aerosmith for the song Cryin'. Queen Latifah won Entertainer of the Year at the Soul Train Music Awards. Reba McEntire, Aerosmith, and Garth Brooks won the music categories at the People's Choice Awards. At the Eurovision Singing Contest, which was held that year in Dublin, Ireland, the country of Ireland won on home turf for the song Rock and Roll Kids. Vince Gill won Entertainer of the Year at the Country Music Association Awards, and Reba McEntire won Entertainer of the Year at the Academy of Country Music Awards. Blur won Best British Album for Park Life, and they also won Best Song for Park Life at the Brit Awards. Celine Dion won Best Album for Color of My Love, while Jan Arden won Best Song for Could I Be Your Girl at the Juno Awards. Tina Arena won Album of the Year for Don't Ask, and Silverchair won Single of the Year for Tomorrow at the ARIA Music Awards. At the Tony Awards, Passion won Best Musical. 1994 was the first time that the Tonys gave out an award for Best Revival of a Musical, which was won in 1994 by Carousel. Before then, plays and musicals went up for the same category called Best Revival. The Pulitzer Prize for Music was won by Gunther Schuller for Of Reminiscences and Reflections, Aaron J. Kernis for Still Movement with Him, and Charles Warinen for Microsymphony. Musically, at the Academy Awards, the movie The Lion King won both music categories, with Elton John and Tim Rice's Can You Feel the Love Tonight winning Best Song, and Hans Zimmer winning Best Original Score. M People won the Mercury Music Prize for the album Elegant Slumming. The 1994 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony was held on January 19th at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York City. At the ceremony, Bono gave one of the best induction speeches ever for inductee Bob Marley. Paul McCartney hugged Yoko Ono during John Lennon's induction. There was supposed to be a reunion of the group The Band, but some feuds continue to run deep, and the one between band members Robbie Robertson and Levon Helm ran rivers deep at that point. They eventually reconciled a decade later, but that was after 35 years of really not talking to each other. During the rest of the ceremony, band leader, talent scout, and record producer Johnny Otis was inducted into the non-performers category. Willie Dixon was inducted into the early influencers category. And in the performers category, the Hall inducted Bob Marley, The Animals, The Band, Duane Eddy, The Grateful Dead, Sir Rod Stewart, John Lennon, and this next artist. Reginald Kenneth Dwight, stage name Elton John, was born March 25, 1947, in Middlesex, England. He started out as a pianist in the local pubs before forming the band Bluesology. After answering an ad placed by an A&R guy from Liberty Records for a songwriter, he was asked to put music to a bunch of lyrics by Bernie Taupin. That began one of the longest songwriting partnerships in music history. Elton's first album was Empty Sky, which didn't do too much. His self-titled follow-up album did much better, spawning the classics Border Song and Your Song. Madman Across the Water and Tumbleweed Connection furthered his ride. From 1969 to 1974, he put out 6 studio albums, a soundtrack, and a live album, a stunning volume of work in only 5 years. He had also begun a streak of number one albums, Honky Tonk Chateau in 1972 and Don't Shoot Me, I'm Only the Piano Player in the beginning of 1973. Apparently not one to rest on his laurels, he and Bernie decided that they should record their next album in Jamaica. The Rolling Stones had recorded their album Goat's Head Soup in Jamaica, and Elton loved the album. Plus, it's a classic album to this very day. And plus, it's Jamaica. Warm, tropical sun, island breezes, great food, reggae music, friendly people. Hell, my mother's Jamaican. How bad could Jamaica be? Well, as it turns out, kind of bad. For starters, the country was going through some political tensions, as we like to say in Jamaica. As an election the year before had swept Prime Minister Michael Manley to power over a very unpopular incumbent, Prime Minister Hugh Shearer. But the economic conditions were such that violence broke out rather regularly. Add to that, George Foreman and Joe Frazier were having a boxing match on the island at the same time, which created a ton of congestion. And since it's Jamaica and it's an island, a little traffic jam can turn into an island-wide traffic jam in a real big hurry. To go along with all of that, the studio equipment had issues. The only good thing to come out of the Jamaican experience was that Elton and Bernie managed to write all of the songs for the album very quickly, probably because they wanted to get out of there. Bernie took almost 3 weeks to write the lyrics, and Elton took only 3 days to write the music. After this perfect storm of craziness and chaos, the guys decided to get back to Europe to record the actual album. They ended up at the Chateau d'Erreville in France, which was where they recorded their last two albums. The album itself ended up being long, although it wasn't really planned to be that long. It was only supposed to be a single record, but since they recorded 18 songs, they decided to make it a double album. The album was originally called Silent Movies, Talking Pictures, and also Vodka and Tonics, before they finally settled on the actual title, Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. It was released on October 5th, 1973. Despite the fact that 6 of the album's songs are considered classic rock staples, at the time it was originally released, only 3 songs were actually released as singles in America: Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting, and Benny and the Jets. Candle in the Wind and Harmony were released in Great Britain. Funeral for a Friend and Love Lies Bleeding wasn't released due to its length of over 11 minutes. The album became the best-selling one of his career, with over 8 million certified copies in America alone. It was in the top 10 in 9 different countries and number 1 in 4 of them. It was the biggest-selling album of 1974 and is considered by many to be his magnum opus. From there, Elton went on a roll. To date, he has put out 31 studio albums, 4 live albums, 7 soundtrack albums, including his Academy Award-winning work on The Lion King, and has sold over 350 million albums worldwide and counting. Of course, if you've seen his biopic Rocket Man, then you know all about his private life, his drug problems and rehab, his near bankruptcy, etc. But hey, rock and roll. He's still considered to be one of the greatest artists of all time. In fact, even though he has officially retired from touring after over 50 years, he's actually more popular than ever, as his last album, 2021's The Lockdown Sessions, went top 10, and his duet, Cold Heart with Dua Lipa, went to number 1, opening up his work to yet another generation of fans. For the record, I don't actually think he's done touring. My prediction is that he'll announce his I'm Not Dead Yet tour by 2026, probably. Elton's Princess Diana version of Candle in the Wind is the biggest selling single of all time worldwide. He's had way too many hit singles to name here from virtually every decade, from Your Song up to Cold Heart and beyond, because I don't actually think he's done yet, which is why I say and beyond. He had 19 top 10 songs in the 1970s, 7 top 10 songs in the 1980s, 4 top 10 songs in the 1990s, none in the 2000s, although he had a few in England during that decade, 1 top 10 song in the 2010s, and 2 so far in this decade. He's won a Tony Award for the Broadway musical Aida, an Academy Award for The Lion King, and 6 Grammy Awards. And if he wins his award category at the upcoming Emmy Awards, he will finally have completed the EGOT, the Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, Tony. He's been knighted by Queen Elizabeth II and has been given similar national awards from the countries of France and the United States. Plus, there's his important work with the Elton John AIDS Foundation. The man is more than a legend. He's an institution. Presented for induction by Axl Rose of 2012 inductees Guns N' Roses, Sir Elton John, inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, class of 1994. And if you want to check out more of his music, I have put it on this week's podcast playlist, which is on YouTube Music, the link to which is in the show notes. Before we go any further, we'd like to tell you about our other podcast, the Music History Today podcast, where we go over the events, music releases, births, and passings for that day in music history. The Music History Today podcast drops each and every day, including on the weekends, on this channel, the Music History Today Network, and also on our Music History Today Network YouTube page. Now, back to the Music Halls of Fame podcast. This week, we're going to look at the case for putting Fela Kuti into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Fela was born and passed away in his home country of Nigeria. He didn't live all that long, only living from 1958 to 1997. What he did during that time was nothing short of game-changing and heroic. First, the game-changing part. Fela, along with his drummer, Tony Allen, was the pioneer of Afrobeat, which is Afro-Cuban and Yoruba mixed with jazz and funk music. In his short life, he put out 27 albums. In my opinion, if you invent a new genre of music that a lot of pop and rock musicians use in some way, shape, or form, then you automatically deserve to get in. The heroic part is that he was a major opponent of the military regime in Nigeria at the time, where he was a human rights activist. He was constantly being arrested on trumped-up charges, no pun intended, for one sort of thing or another. Actually, he was arrested over 200 times. While other activists fled their countries, Fela stayed and fought. He was also a Rage Against the Machine before Rage was even a band in America. Something else about Fela was that he was someone who was an AIDS conspiracy guy and held serious doubts about the disease even existing. However, all indications are that Fela actually passed away from AIDS-related illness, so complicated legacy, I would say. Now, for the vast majority of you, when I said Fela Kuti, your first thought was, who's Fela Kuti? And then when I said Afrobeat, some of you probably said, what's Afrobeat? And that, my friends, is a big reason why Fela might not get into the hall, even though he was on the list of nominees only a couple of years ago. Afrobeat, for the record again, is West African musical styles that are mixed with American funk, soul, and jazz. Fella has had plays and Broadway musicals written about him, and his music has influenced an entire continent of people, along with many a rock and pop act who have mixed African rhythms into their music, like, say, The Police, Paul Simon, and such. Now, will Fela Kuti ever get nominated into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame again? Maybe. It has happened once already, and that was only a couple years back. Maybe he'll be more like Chic or MC5 or Rufus and just constantly be nominated and still not get in. Hopefully, though, he will be inducted sometime soon. Because like I said, if you've invented an entirely new genre of music that a lot of people use in their music these days, especially in the EDM realm, then you automatically deserve to get inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Now, since a lot of you don't know who Fela Kuti is, I have put some of his music into this week's playlist, which is on YouTube Music, and I have put that link, along with Elton John's stuff, in the show notes. In 1928, the Fort Worth and Denver South Plains Railway Depot opened at 1801 Cricket's Avenue in Lubbock, Texas. By the 1990s, the railway had long since moved out and the building was not in use. It was bought in 1996 by the city of Lubbock, since the city needed a place to showcase some memorabilia that it received from the estate of its favorite son. In 1999, the depot reopened under the name of its favorite son, the Buddy Holly Center. The center has lots of memorabilia and exhibits about Buddy's life. It also has art galleries. Your ticket price includes free admission to the art gallery. General admission is $8, with senior citizens 60 and over paying $6, and students with an ID, kids 6 and under, museum members, and active duty military paying absolutely nothing to come visit. The center is normally open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and on Sundays from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. The center is closed on Mondays, holidays, Good Friday, and Easter Sunday. As always, check their website for updated ticket prices and hours of operation. BuddyHollyCenter.org is their website, and we will throw that website into the show notes. Now, there are certain dates that get immortalized into the national consciousness for one reason or another. They unfortunately usually have to do with tragic events. November 22nd, 1963, John F. Kennedy's assassination. Unless you're QAnon, in which case he's actually still alive. September 11, 2001, the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. The January 6, 2021 insurrection of the United States Capitol. Some get immortalized in a song. April 4, 1968, Martin Luther King's assassination, which was the basis of U2's song Pride in the Name of Love. Don McLean's song American Pie immortalized the loss of innocence after this next tragic event. Charles Hardin Holly was one of the pioneers of rock and roll. Nicknamed Buddy, he was born on September 7, 1936 and raised in Lubbock, Texas, where he learned to play guitar as a kid. Like a lot of musicians back then, Holly was heavily influenced by country, gospel, and R&B music. He started playing on local TV shows and actually opened up for Elvis Presley once. That was the point when he decided to go into music full-time. He recorded for Decca Records, but wasn't happy there, so he recorded a demo for producer Norman Petty, who ended up becoming his manager. And it was through Petty that Holly recorded That'll Be the Day with his band The Crickets. Buddy Holly and The Crickets released the album Chirping Crickets in late 1957. Over the next couple of years, he and his band toured all over the country and also made it out to Australia and Great Britain. In the late 1950s, rock and roll was beginning to gain steam. Acts started touring across the United States. By this time, Buddy had hit it big with songs like Peggy Sue. His act started out as Buddy Holly and the Crickets, but he broke up with his backup band in late 1958 and was in need of a new band for a new tour. He got future country superstar Waylon Jennings, along with Tommy Alsup, Carl Bunch, and Frankie Sardo. They dubbed the tour the Winter Dance Party Tour. They were going to play 24 cities in 24 days. Along to support the tour were Dion and the Belmonts, J.P. Richardson, a.k.a. the Big Bopper, who had a hit song at the time called Chantilly Lace, and Richie Valens, who was getting real hot off of songs like La Bamba and Donna. There were problems with the tour from the start. The performances were fine amongst themselves, but the fact was that it was a tour in the Midwest in the middle of winter, and it was a pretty bad winter that year. Their tour buses were actually old school buses, and the heat broke down on them a lot, and band members actually started to catch the flu. The tour started on January 23rd in Wisconsin. By the time the tour hit Clear Lake, Iowa, Holly had had enough with the buses. As it were, Clear Lake wasn't even on the original tour list, but they had an open date and the buses had driven over 350 miles to get there. So, Holly decided he was going to charter a plane for the next stop, which was Fargo, North Dakota. The manager of the Surf Ballroom, the place they were playing that night, called the Dwyer Flying Service to charter a single-engine Beechcraft 35 Bonanza plane with a pilot named Roger Peterson. The plane could only fit three people plus the pilot. Peterson told everybody that they couldn't all fit on the plane. There had been some discrepancy over the years as to exactly how the events went down, as to how people were chosen for this flight, especially after Dion DiMucci, the Dion in Dion and the Belmonts, changed up his story a little in an interview not too long ago. I'm going to go with the common story, as it is known and was, of course, portrayed in the Richie Valens movie La Bamba, starring Lou Diamond Phillips. Originally, it was supposed to be Holly, Jennings, and Alsup. However, Richardson, the Big Bopper, had the flu and asked Jennings if he could take the seat. Jennings said yes. When Holly found out about it, he good-naturedly kidded with Jennings, saying, quote, "I hope your old bus freezes up," end quote. To which Jennings kidded back, quote, "Well, I hope your old plane crashes," end quote. That phrase haunted Jennings for the rest of his life, according to him. As far as how Valens ended up on this doomed flight, he asked to trade with Alsup. Alsup didn't actually want to give up his seat, so the two decided on a coin toss. Valens won the coin toss, or lost it, depending on how you look at things. After the concert, Holly, Richardson, and Valens were driven out to the airfield and boarded the plane. The weather going to Fargo that night was getting bad, but apparently the pilot, Peterson, never got those updates to the forecast. The plane took off. When the plane was supposed to do a radio check, there was no response. The air tower tried again and again. No response. The next morning, the owner of the Dwyer Flying Service took up another airplane to retrace the flight path to see what might have happened. And it was he who spotted the wreckage of the plane, which had crashed onto a field not long after takeoff. Buddy Holly's wife, who was pregnant at the time, found out through news reports and not through authorities. She collapsed and later had a miscarriage. After that, a rule was adopted to not release any victim's name of an accident until relatives are notified first. Unfortunately, that rule was not nationwide, otherwise Kobe Bryant's wife might not have found out about his death through news reports and might have actually found out about it through the authorities. But that didn't happen either. As far as a cause for the accident, it was mainly blamed on the inexperience of Peterson, the pilot, who was only 21 at the time and hadn't had enough training, nor did the plane have the right equipment to fly in wintry conditions, according to authorities. The tour itself would go on, with Jennings taking over headlining duties for a couple more weeks. For a generation, though, their childhood innocence was lost that day, much like it was when Kurt Cobain died in the 1990s for the Gen X generation, like myself, or when Chester Bennington and Chris Cornell died recently for millennials. Don McLean coined the loss that day in American Pie as the day the music died, and the plane crash that killed Buddy Holly, Ritchie Valens, and the Big Bopper that was immortalized in Don McLean's classic song American Pie occurred on February 3rd, 1959. You can learn more about the short but extremely brilliant life of Buddy Holly and view all of his memorabilia at the Buddy Holly Center at 1801 Crickets Avenue in Lubbock, Texas. And for those who have never heard of Buddy Holly or just want to listen to his music again, I have thrown his music into this podcast playlist, which again is on YouTube Music, and the link for that is in the show notes. The Music Halls of Fame podcast is part of the Music History Today network, which can be found under Music History Today on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts from, and also on our YouTube page under Music History Today. Thank you very much for listening.